Hey, this is Springer. I got better things to do tonight than die, like listening to the Geekcast Radio Network.
Welcome to The Pull Bags, Back Issue Classics. Join us as we talk about comics from yesteryear, from DC, Marvel, and more. So open your ears to hear our discussion of the older continuities, as the Back Issue Classics are also what's in The Pull Bag.
Hello and welcome back to the Autobally August coverage of IDW Publishing's Transformers comics here inside the pull bag and also featured on All Things Transformers. I am one of your hosts, TFG1 Mike. Joining me to wreck and rule is Lady Wreck. Hello.
Howdy.
And joining us is Ryan the Indian Flo Merkley. Hello, sir.
What?
What do you mean, what?
I haven't done that in a while.
I know.
Been good.
Yep. Today, we all get sinful with the Wreckers as we are looking at Sins of the Wreckers, written and drawn by Nick Roche with colors by Josh Burcham. For those of you who don't know, the Autobot strategist Prowl is missing, drawn into a familiar web of vengeance and manipulation. The Autobots...
Did you have to say web?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
It's on the back of the book. You know, the Autobot's darkest...
The inside of the book, not the back.
Ani guy. The Autobot's darkest secrets are about to be exposed by their greatest human ally. The Wreckers lie in tatters after the trauma of their last stand, and their leader Springer, the only person Prowl trusts to rescue him, is in a coma.
Yeah, that sounds about right. Right there, we're in a Wrecker story.
We don't call for cleanup. We don't call for backup. We call for cleanup.
Yeah, there's a lot of cleanup that needs to be done right now.
So before the podcast, before we started recording, I just read this. I had not read this when it first came out because I don't read comics when they first come out anymore. I wait until
and
I eventually do.
That is your biggest sin.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. But obviously Lady Wreck, you know, she is the huge Wreckers fangirl.
Don't oversell me too
around
much
here.
Because I've been so incredibly busy. I haven't had a chance to read everything in the trade, but yeah.
Yeah. So, I remember when I was getting ready to set this episode up, it was before Ryan, or it might have been after Ryan said he was interested in doing it with us.
And oh boy, am I, oh, you meant the podcast.
The podcast,
sorry.
You dummy. So I then, at some point a couple months ago or a couple weeks ago, I forget when it was, I messaged Lady Wreck on Facebook and I said, you need to pick your favorite five covers out of all five issues of all the covers. And she's like, how dare you ask me to do that? This is torture.
Do you have that list, by the way? Because I'm like, I don't even remember what I sent you now.
It's somewhere. I don't know where it is.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
You won't be here for the show then, right? Wah, wah.
No, the art will be the covers you chose once the art's made.
Damn.
But let's see here. It was
start getting hate mail from people now.
Number one was the sub cover.
There's nobody listening.
Yeah, really, ain't that the truth? People listen to this podcast? No.
If anyone is listening, I want you to post what Mike's actual biggest sin is. I would argue it's either listening to Nickelback or evaluating films based on their trailers. I'd say those are his two biggest sins.
Stolen when you're walking through the fire for fun. many times do I have to tell you people this? That's the point of a trailer, is to make a initial judgment of whether you want to go waste money on it in the theater or not.
Really? I thought a review was based on the actual final product, which I get paid to evaluate. I guess I've been doing this wrong all these years. I better send those checks back.
I was just going to say, for me, the trailers have always been just the tease to get you to at least put your foot in the door. If they tease you and you don't put your foot in the door, you're like, whatever, I can see that.
All right, so how do we want to break this down?
I don't know. I was just enjoying making you feel bad.
Yeah. Well, it's what Canadians do best, make us Americans feel bad.
Oh, damn.
I know, right?
Can't help being better. Don't look at me.
Whoa, some strong words there. Is it bad of me to say that my ancestors came from Canada? Did you know that, Mike, before you put me on this podcast?
Oh, Lord. Now I really need a beer.
It's bad that you left. I can only assume there was some sort of Russian collusion, though.
Oh!
Dang. Okay, Wreckers, how do we want to break this down?
Well, hopefully we get to it before we wreck the podcast.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure we lost what little audience we already had.
Well, we could do it in order, like we usually do.
Yeah.
Issue number one, let's go.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely not start with issue number 5, because, you know.
We could go backwards and do a cliff jumper. 5, 4, 3, 2...
I will preface this that I'm not sure how Last Stand read in individual issues. I ended up getting The Last Stand of the Wreckers fairly late, I think after the first 3 trades of More Than Meets the Eye and RID were out. Reason being, Costa's run turned me off of reading forever.
I knew it. Some people were saying... Sorry, go ahead.
Actually, I think it was Shane McCarthy's stuff first, and then I tried to get back into it with Costa, and then, oh. But anyway, so I didn't read Last Stand in individual issues, and I ended up picking it up in trade much later. It was kind of my jumping on point for the IDW verse post-Simon Furman's run, and in the end... The trade for Last Stand of the Wreckers is fantastic. I would put it up there with some of Roberts's best trades as, well, I mean, he wrote this too, but anyway. Some of his best work as the best Transformers trade, period. But I don't know how those individual issues read. When I read Sins of the Wreckers individually, I don't know if it's because of the time frame it was released in. For anyone who doesn't know this, it was not released in a particularly prompt manner. There were delays on it. There were some personal issues, like the usual kind of stuff that happens with comics.
Mm-hmm.
But for whatever reason, it just, I don't know, it didn't grab me. I like it much better in trade. I think it works a lot better in trade. And yeah, just, you know, like Last Stand, it ends up being a really good individual trade paperback.
Yeah, Amy, Nicole, Heather, and I talked Last Stand way back. This was 2 years ago at this point, in episode 114 of the Pull Bag. So it's been a while since I've looked at Last Stand. But you're right. When we reviewed it in trade. Like I said a moment ago, I do not read comics. I don't want to sit here and say I don't read them for fun, but that's kind of like, I read them so I can talk about them on the podcast. I have fun while I'm reading them, but I don't just buy a comic and read it and then not, you know, do anything with it. I wait and I make plans for the podcast to read stuff and then talk about it with my friends. So it's one of those things where I had gotten Sins of the Wreckers number 1 and 2, but then all the delays and whatever personal issues were happening with the creative team, I don't know, and that's not something we need to even talk about. But it's one of those things where after the first 2 issues, I'm like, oh, okay, well, I'll wait till the next one. And then it kept, I think issue 3 was the one that got delayed and delayed and delayed. And then I think issue 4 came out, and then issue 5 got delayed because of whatever was going on in Nick Roche's life at the time.
And that's fine. I'm not criticizing.
No, that. Yeah, no, and I'm not criticizing it either. I'm basically saying that I only had the first two issues when it first came out, and I just said, you know what, I'm just going to wait for the trade. And I think I got the trade on one of the Transformers sales that Comixology was having. So I prefer reading the IDW.
I think part of my point, too, was flat out just that I don't think it read that well in issues, period, whether or not they came out on time.
Yeah.
It's one of those books that works better when you can sit down and read the entire thing and get the whole picture, partially because, I mean, there's a lot of mystery and backstory slash flashbacks involved in that actual trade.
Amy, you're the tiebreaker here.
Okay, so... I came in on reading Transformers just before Last Stand of the Wreckers hit, so I was actually around with the single issues. I thought they read fine, but then again, I'm all right with waiting. I kind of look at issues as chapters, and so when it doesn't really, to me, it doesn't finish until it gets to the whole end of the whole. I every issue that came out, I was waiting for the next very happily, fine one way or the other. In terms of there were some delays even with Last Stand as well, because there just happened to be a volcano that went off right in the middle of trying to publish them, and that delayed things in for one issue, and then I don't remember if there was another delay after that, but yeah, let it not be said that there's ever any delays when it comes to putting out anything with Wreckers, because so far it's 2 for 2 now. just, you know, heaven and earth just seems to move in that direction.
In general, it happens too. Yeah. Like, even the major Marvel titles have, you know, constant delays. I mean, the two biggest examples were Civil War, the original, that got delayed incredibly heavily because of art. And then, of course, the legendary one, which is Hulk, Ultimate Hulk versus Ultimate Wolverine, which was delayed roughly 4 years, so...
Wow. Is that the biggest delay in comics history?
Yeah. I'd have to look it up. I don't know off the top of my head. Yeah. It's got to be up there.
Don't ask me either.
You expect me to do research on the stuff I mentioned?
Yes. I expect you to know your shit.
Verifiable. Yeah.
It's like you, I haven't even read Sins of the Wreckers.
It's like Stick says, get your shit together.
So anyway, the bulk of what anybody needs to know from this series before this is basically just that Verity has the recording of the, however it's pronounced, Aquitus, yeah. Thank you, trials from the previous Garrus 9 intervention / breaking everybody out. And really, like, this is not a bad trade in terms of it's not bogged down super heavily by stuff that happened in previous issues or even previous Transformers stories.
Because,
I mean, RC just kind of appears, even though she's on Earth. Well, she's on Earth doing something else at the same time as this was going on. But it doesn't really matter. It just works, so...
Yeah. I mean, her background basically is just the fact that when she became part of the mainstream again, and as she was Prowl's kind of hitman or hitwoman, and she comes into this pretty much just like, hey, where's Prowl? Because we need to have a conversation, and most of it's going to end with me wanting to stab him.
As with everybody in the IDW-verse at this point.
Pretty much. But Prowl has an extra dose of that, just because Prowl is just an evil character as it is. Mr. I'm going to do whatever I'm going to do, and you know what? Consequences be damned. That's him.
The last time we did this, 2 years ago, after I read it, I grabbed several of Springer's lines, and I sent them to Neil Ross to do promos for us, because we had just got an interview with Neil Ross. And I thought about doing that with some of the Prowl stuff, asking Michael, but I can't ask Michael Bell to do this Prowl, because this Prowl is just so...
Prowl. such a growl.
It's
in some ways better because he's so much more. There's so much more to. He's not washed. Not that the original was washed out, but like there's. You love to hate him, but you at a lot of points you find out that his existence is kind of necessary to a point,
mm-hmm.
which makes it you love it, but you hate it, but you love it. It's like this nice little dynamic that you're like, he's a total asshole, and all of his ideals are just like, dude, you just need to stop. But you also find a way to agree with the fact that his existence and the way that he does things at points is kind of necessary.
Mm-hmm. And like the other logic-based character in the IDW universe, Shockwave, he pretty much is... He and Shockwave are the two most important characters in the Transformers universe, really. I mean, they kick off the majority of the events in one way or another, in ways that even Optimus Prime and Megatron don't.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And I mean, Shockwave, literally seeded a lot of the events that would be important in the IDW universe way back in his past. And yep. Prowl, with his sort of organization and scheming, basically put everybody in the position they would end up being in where we see them. So, I mean, the two of them very much. They really are the most important part of the universe for IDW, and one of them kind of got his comeuppance, and that was Shockwave, obviously, because I mean he's dead, at least in theory. He's dead.
In theory.
Yeah.
We don't know for sure.
Bumblebee's okay, but anyway.
Sort of.
Yeah, possibly.
Depends on what you've read. Don't blow everybody's minds yet. If you haven't read one of the I recently reread it, thinking, "Oh yeah, that's right." But yes, Bumblebee is
maybe okay. We don't know what's going on.
Maybe we will.
Luckily, Till All or One was canceled, so we may never find it.
Oh, Ryan!
No. It's something they'll come back to. If John Barber has anything to say about that.
Yeah, I would hope so.
We're just in the waiting game right now to find out where it actually goes, if they come back to this or not. But I think they will. I'm pretty sure they will.
But all you're saying
about Shockwave and Prowl is absolutely right.
We've never seen Prowl suffer the consequences of his actions, aside from, you know, he gets a talking to from Magnus. Chrome Dome throws him off a cliff, which wasn't nearly enough of a beating he needed. And of course, Max kicks him, and then, the worst he got was the somewhat knockdown drag-out with Optimus Prime.
Punch to the face, and then he gets away. It's like, ah!
Well, he gets dragged away by Rattrap, yeah. But,
I think the only thing wrong with Sins of the Wreckers when it comes to Prowl, he doesn't flip any tables.
True. So Prowl's disappeared, and we kick off with Cup and RC looking for him, and they find a number of items on his computers, / not a lot of info on his whereabouts on their computers at the same time.
Oh, because they insinuate this, is that any number of people could have him. Most of the usual suspects have been ruled out, but think about it. In all the years that Prowl has burned bridges, anybody could have him at this point.
Mm-hmm.
That list would be very long if he was starting to hint at who it could be. I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, so eventually they get turned
on
to...
I don't think the villain in Sins would have been listed among there, except very, very low down on the list, because if he had known that this guy was going to come back, I'm pretty sure he would have put him at the top of the list, right?
Yep.
So they get turned on to Verity's Trail in the end, but also not before we get a brief sort of flash to what's up with Impactor, Guzzle, and then Roadbuster, who are all hanging out on Debris. That's the Wreckers space station, which I believe we see for the first time in the IDW verse. Guzzle is, well, A, Guzzle's sort of gone nuts. B, by the way, it's never explained, but why the hell is Guzzle like six times the size he used to be? I never figured that out. Anyway.
It goes back to his tech spec, actually.
Yeah, and oh, I know. It's just in-universe for some reason. Yeah, he's just...
Since we've seen him, he pretty much upgraded himself to the max.
Yeah, it's just... I'm not sure how he did it, since Impactor only has one hand. Maybe he worked on himself. It's like it's the old Walking Dead question of how does Rick put on all his shirts? So... we find out again that, you know, there's been no change in Springer. He's still comatose on board debris. Then we flash back to Cup and RC, and this is the point where they figure out that, you know, something's going on with Verity. They get a recording from Prowl, who basically, I mean, it's a fairly... Prowl clearly knows he has a lot of enemies since he mentions it.
Yeah.
And just, you know, asks to, you know, them to find Springer, and yeah, he's the only one he trusts to find him.
Surprisingly enough. After all the things that he's put him through.
Well, he hasn't tortured Springer quite as much, but...
Until you get to the end of this.
Yeah. I remember when this... Was it BotCon, Amy? I don't know. There was one of the Transformers conventions when this first came out. You would either post it in the group chat or somewhere on Facebook or something. Here, look, mm-hmm. Preview! And I remember the preview pages ended on the Prowl hologram message thing. And I'm like, oh, wow. Okay! I love Nick's art in this so far.
Yeah, all the way through, it's quite good, and yep. That's not surprising. He's one of the best artists on... Yeah, I said it before when we were recording the stuff for More Than Meets the Eye and not R.I.D., and that is just that all of the artists and colorers and Tom Long on lettering for IDW mm-hmm. are fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
When I talk about an art being down or not as good as somebody else's, it's not saying much because the art is always so great that even stepping down to really, really good is a step downwards.
Yeah, I mean, with the entire stable of artists that IDW has that work on the Transformers books, whether it's Josh Burcham, Josh Perez, Joanna LaFuente, it doesn't matter who it is, Priscilla... Alex, any of those people, you know, Casey Collar, any of those guys and gals, they all bring their own unique take on whatever the story is. And that's just such a great thing to do, I think.
Yeah.
I totally agree. They all have their own flavor. They all, and they're passionate about what they do. I mean, not to say that others aren't, but they're not. I get the sense in any time that I've ever talked with them, it's more than just a job. It's a passion.
Yeah.
And it shows. It really bleeds through their work.
But I'll tell you right now, John Barber, no more six artists on one Dark Cybertron. That was too much.
It's because it's an event.
I know, but still.
Almost all events have more than their fair share of artists and colorists.
Yeah.
So to end out and close out the issue quickly, Cup and RC jump Stakeout and Verity. Stakeout is sort of guarding over / watching over Verity. He was the police car we saw at the end of Last Stand of the Wreckers. And he's there, he's there through Magnus. He mentions being a deputy of the Terrest Accord. Mm-hmm. However, the... acting Terrest Accord person is now Fort Max, but I guess nobody told Stakeout that. But anyway.
He hasn't come through the email yet.
Well, yeah, and even then, I mean, Max probably wouldn't, you know, have him change or anything. Yeah. In the end, they all get, to make a long story short, they all get confronted by Springer and the newly reformed Wreckers, consisting of Roadbuster, Cup, Springer, Guzzle, Impactor, and I guess Hubcap's kind of tagging along. I don't think he's a actual member of the Wreckers, but
yeah, I agree. Yeah,
we'll see why he's along later.
Yeah,
I do want to say, though, before we get this final reveal in the first issue here of Springer, it's like the alarm goes off. What is that, intruder? No, that's medical. It's Springer. And we see the because Cup had a talking to him earlier, like, wake your ass up.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm ordering you to wake up.
Yeah. Yes, and seeing the last page of this first issue being, you know, Springer in the wreck is just like, oh god, that's so cool.
Having said that, it didn't occur to anybody else to order him to wake up. I mean, come on, guys.
But who? Okay, but who would he listen to though?
I guess Roadbuster's terrible stories weren't enough to wake him up. Whirl trying to choke him didn't work, but nobody decided to just say, why don't you get up?
Because it's different. It's coming from Cup, who is like Ben's
mentor. Oh, I know. I'm just joking.
Mentor, anyway. So, yeah. It's like, and Cup was kind of out of commission himself, so.
Yeah, which is, we finally get closure on that, kind of, but that's much later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, issue one ends with the group shot. We jump off with issue two into the first of our flashbacks to the past, kind of showing Prowl's previous life / things that he's...
The daydream.
Yeah.
I wish that had happened.
Yeah. It's a combination of kind of everything. Yeah, he wishes Prime actually saw, you know, didn't think of him as a piece of shit, but it's hard not to.
Yeah.
And I guess once we find out that it is a dream sequence kind of thing, I guess as soon as I saw the webs, I should have guessed who the character was gonna, but I still didn't guess. I should have, but I didn't. I didn't think about it. because they bring up this one character from Prowl's past, Methuselah or whatever, but it's one of those things where, okay, so that's a new character to me reading this, and because like I said, it's been about 2 years since I read Last Stand, and okay, we'll see where this is going, and by the time we get to what the eventual reveal is later, it's like, oh wow, I so did not see that coming at all.
This is also the first time that he's ever been in the IDW verse as well. It wasn't, I mean, there were a lot of speculation at the time, but yeah, there's only such a short list on that, so...
It's because his name and then a bunch of other things are puns on different spider subspecies and species, so a lot of people kind of figured that, okay, it's...
It wasn't tarantulas. Too hard, to figure out who it was, but at the same time, it was like... If you're reading all of the other stuff that's going on in Robots in Disguise and Optimus Prime, the lead up to Optimus Prime, where they rebranded and then called it Transformers. But originally, after the war is over and we split off and have More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise, all of the unaligned characters that they're calling unaligned are, you know, Beast Wars characters and characters that have never been in IDW that they're bringing back into, you know, the full continuity of IDW as being unaligned characters. And so that we're getting new ones all the time. And Tarantulas had not been brought in yet. So the fact that he showed up was like, I think it was also a win too, because a lot of fans wanted him back. So.
No, I liked it. I was not expecting it. I don't have anything wrong. I don't like anything about.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Unexpected. It was also unexpected because we hadn't seen him yet, so it was kind of good to.
At least it wasn't an unexpected
reveal. It was a win.
It wasn't an unexpected reveal that ruined everything, like the Doctor being a woman. Anyway, so. Jesus.
Hopefully you didn't just spoil somebody.
This airs in like over a month, so
This will air in August, so they'll know by now. I mean,
so
it just blew my mind because I found out that about a couple hours before we started recording. So, thank you, Twitter, for spoiling me. And I don't mean that on anybody specific. It was quite literally. I went on everywhere. Twitter to see,
it's everywhere.
It was trending. Yeah. And they said the next female, the next doctor's a female. I went, oh, thank you, Twitter, for the trending spoiler there. I got it even if I didn't want it.
But sorry. I mean, okay, but, and this is just nothing to do with comics or, well, Doctor Who does have comics, but it's one of those things where all the other doctors have been men. And the fact that the 13th doctor is a woman, is that really a, we don't know what kind of doctor she's going to be. We don't know what kind of stories, because the other part of that is Moffat is gone. Like, I am He's the most casual, not even a Doctor Who fan, and even I know that Moffat was running the thing for the first, you know, X number of years. But I don't know. Anyway, Prowl in a spider web. Yeah.
I feel like we probably should just do a whatever podcast, because usually I mention my single line tangents and then just move on, accepting it as like the offhanded joke or whatever it is. But for some reason, we're having discussions about them. I'm going to have to stay on point for once. This sucks.
So, yeah, I know, right? Stay on point, fool!
Issue 2, I'm going to sum up in... Well, it's your fault. You're the host. Issue 2, I'm going to sum up in record time, then. So, the... God damn it. Now I can't remember the pronunciation again. It's been too long.
Just call him by his name. It's Trangelus.
No, not that. I meant the files get stolen from Verity.
Oh,
Equitas. Yeah.
Thank you. Anyway, they get stolen from Verity. Cup, it's discovered, has a setup within him that allows Prowl to take control of him, see through his eyes, and speak through him. So our heroes / Wreckers get a quick update on Prowl, where he is, and who's holding him, or at least his idea of where he is, because he's not entirely sure. And in our previous sort of flashbacks to where he is, it's either dark and he can't see anything, or he's stuck in the noise maze, which more on that momentarily. So in any case, the bunny rabbit that has stolen Verity's backpack gets eaten by a whale, as one does.
When you're a rabbit, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, and in this trade, we discovered...
There's always a bigger fish.
What?
Sorry.
Rabbit's not a fish, and the whale's not a fish.
I know.
It's terrible. Anyway, so we discover that the beasts in question, including a polar bear that appeared earlier, are all actually Transformers. These are not Beast Wars era Transformers, which is interesting. I thought it was interesting that this is our first introduction to Carnifax and some of the others from G1.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's not super important if you are not well-versed in Generation 1.
No, so, you didn't need to know any of that, because, I mean, like, when I first read this, I didn't know either, but it's just basically, just think of it as this, is if you don't know any backstory, it's just another group of Transformers that the Wreckers are up against, so, you know.
And the whale turns out to be Tidal Wave, and so they end up attacking Tidal Wave in an attempt to get... the files back / they're fairly certain at this point that Prowl is within Tidal Wave, and that's kind of where we end off on this issue.
Mm-hmm. So does Tidal Wave have Pinocchio and Geppetto as well?
Why not? I mean, we're already we're already referencing all this other, you know, pop culture. Why not? Yeah, sure. It's got, you know, Geppetto and Pinocchio as well.
I thought Pinocchio was the president currently.
Hey! Anyway. His orange nose doesn't grow that much.
No, it's just when you master lying.
Oh!
I guess it's not a lie if you believe it, though. So, issue 3. This time we get an actual full-on flashback that is not Prowl's imagination, and we see his we sort of see his relationship with Tarantulas / Mesothelus.
Yeah, something.
Methuselah.
Just call him Tarantula. Tarantulas.
Tarantula.
Tarantula.
Shut up.
So Meanwhile, though, the Wreckers, or at least Springer, RC, Hubcap, and Roadbuster, oh, and Verity, have entered Tidal Wave and are stuck in the noise maze, which messes with the Transformers, basically all of their senses and their minds. It doesn't seem to affect Verity. We will eventually see, and how they kind of get through there is it doesn't affect Hubcap at all. Finally, Prowl comes face to face with the newly renamed Tarantulas. So I can stop trying to mess up the pronunciation of everything. The rest of the Wreckers, consisting of Impactor, Cup, and Guzzle, are foiled as Tidal Wave is finally able to transform and go back underwater. And at this point, Impactor figures out slash remembers exactly what it is they're up against and decides to go back to debris with everybody. Mm-hmm. We discover that the thing stuck in Tidal Wave's transformation cog, by the way, unfortunately, was poor Stakeout, which really sucks. I like Stakeout, and then he gets offed. Like, it seems to be a record tradition, though, that somebody new in the series gets offed early. We had Rotorstorm.
Yeah.
Who, you know, Overlords took a real liking to.
So that's putting it mildly.
So we get the first really long discussion between Prowl and Tarantulas at this point, in which we learn that Tarantulas is looking for someone, as well as he really wants Prowl to work with him. Which, you know, who wouldn't want to work with Prowl? He's such a good, dependable, loyal guy.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, I mean, that's the bulk of the issue, which this one ends up being a really wordy issue. You know, I'll talk about it a little bit more after I finish the summation. But anyway, so we end the issue with A, Hubcap is immune in the noise maze. This is important because we finally figure out that Hubcap is not on our hero's side. More on that next issue. And then B, Impactor's grave, for whatever reason, contains a portal into the noise maze.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, and Tarantulas has captured everybody again because, yeah, we've figured out that Hubcap's wasn't on their side. He was working for slash with Tarantulas.
Yep. I think the reason why issue 3 is so wordy is because out of a 5-issue miniseries, you have to have some sort of exposition. You don't really want it in the first. I know, but you don't really want it in the first 2 issues because you have to set up the story for everybody that has never read any of this stuff before.
It's not a complaint, and it has to happen after the Tarantulas reveal. I'm just saying that there's a number of sort of philosophical debates contained within this book. And a lot of that is on the different nature of everybody involved, most notably Prowl, who has the habit of Prowl will aim the gun, but will never, ever pull the trigger. He's the guy that's responsible for everything, but never has to experience the consequences, whereas the Wreckers are the complete opposite. They experience the consequences of Prowl, Shockwave, Megatron Prime, whoever is in charge. They're
usually the ones pulling the trigger.
Yeah, they're the ones that have to live with everything. But even to a certain extent, Prime...
Or die.
Die
with everything.
But even Prime and Megatron, I mean, Megatron had to come to terms during More Than Meets the Eye with the fact that his orders and what he's done has resulted in billions and billions of deaths on his hands, complete with genocide in certain scenarios. And he finally comes face to face with that. And that's, you know, the issue between them is, even though Prime cares, he doesn't always have to see the consequences of his actions.
And so half the time, he doesn't even know that some of these are being made in his name.
Yeah, like the Dinobots atrocities that we'll talk about in the, I would call it the Ment series, / Dinobot trilogy. But, I mean, he didn't know about stuff like that, or he had a vague idea of it. And Megatron somewhat similarly with the DJD, but in the end, it makes them similar to Prowl in that they're not the ones actually pulling the trigger in those scenarios and doing it, but it's still on their orders.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a lot of this book is an examination of that. And to a certain extent, that kind of spiraled out of Last Stand of the Wreckers, which was a lot less philosophical, but the same questions were always there because everything happened on Prowl's orders. Prowl didn't care about the people involved either. He didn't care that Fort Max was there being tortured for 3 years. It was just the revelation that the files could get out, and that's what prompted him to finally send somebody or do something about it. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's more of Prowl's douchebaggery on display. Well, it is, and I mean, that's what a lot of this series is about. And so in the third issue, yeah, it's a full examination of Prowl's actually got to discuss some of his decisions and things he's done in the past.
Which usually he's free of, because, you know, like you said, consequences are not usually the thing that he has to deal with. It's the Wreckers or whoever he sends out to deal with those consequences. He usually just picks up the pieces afterwards and moves on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
So, fourth issue, everyone has now come together at this point as debris itself is brought into the noise maze by Cup, Impactor, and Guzzle, which causes the entire area to completely begin just collapsing.
Overwhelming it, yeah.
Yeah. And it's able to get everybody free, and we kind of get the beginning of the final battle is at this point. And everybody is kind of fighting everybody, which works really well in a Wreckers book. This is basically how it all devolves at some point.
Yeah, devolves, yeah.
Either way. We got... earlier we had the flashback to Roadbuster and how... Well, essentially it's how he became a Wrecker, A, but B, also some of the atrocities that he had committed and that have been mentioned in other series finally get shown. He killed a bunch of his own cadets because he was hearing voices in his head.
Yeah.
Turned out it was Tarantulas in his head. He thought it was Mortalus, who, by the way, is one of the Transformers sort of gods that get worshipped and get mentioned once in a while, most notably in More Than Meets the Eye. But, yeah, in the end, Roadbuster gets killed by Tarantulas in much the same method. And Tarantulas kind of just sort of says he's going to recapture everybody and experiment on them, because that's what he does.
I guess. I don't know. This was...
Well, no, he's not a good guy, and we find out that... Screw it, I'm just going to jump straight into the last book.
Well, I mean, wait, no. What I'm saying is when I said I guess is more so when you said, oh, Tarantula says, oh, I'm just going to experiment on everybody. I'm like, I guess that's what he's going to do because says, that's...
Yeah, by the end, I'll have done something weird to everybody.
Yeah.
Well, and he also goes out of his way to help Verity, too, so...
Yeah, we discovered that
which
he's...
Is...
Here
kind of the only nice thing that he does in the whole thing.
To a certain extent. I mean, he...
It's like, okay, how
jumping to the
magnanimous of you.
Yeah, so, yeah. Sort of. I mean, jumping to the main issue at hand here, the other good thing he did was bring Springer life. Springer is a synthetic Transformer. He is not created by any of the means which Transformers are normally created, which traditionally is... the Matrix or some type of spark hotspot, again, usually a result of the Matrix. But all of the methods we've ever seen, it's not like the old cartoon show where you could just build a Transformer and somehow it would just work as a Transformer, like the Dinobots.
Or, you know, take old jetliners and spaceships and take them in front of a giant computer and, you know.
At least there was some mythology there. It always bugs me
about
the Dinobots, by the way. They just build these robot dinosaurs and suddenly they're Transformers.
Man, I think that was because there wasn't a lot...
As a child, I was a nitpicky prick. What can I say?
You still are. I mean,
I didn't say I grew out of it. I'm just saying.
and you're right, but see, the thing of it is you know, that's what season one, season two, when Wheeljack builds them. Yeah. So they didn't inject any of the Cybertronian mythology. Yeah. Either way, it doesn't matter. Either way, it doesn't matter. The Constructicons have three different fucking origins. I mean, come on. Throughout that whole series, you know, so it's one of those things where
they showed up after they were built, which is my favorite.
Yeah. They didn't really. Before, so with the Dinobots and with a lot of the creation of a lot of the other ones, it's like before the movie and all that, they didn't really have the stories of the mythology, because the Cybertronian origin stuff doesn't happen until, you know, we get that infamous scene where, you know, Rodimus short circuits himself and goes inside the Matrix in Five Faces of Darkness. You know, we didn't really have any of that in the first two seasons of the cartoon, so I don't know.
So in any case, like, this is a big deal, because in IDW's Transformerverse, the creation of Transformers is generally considered to be exceptionally difficult, or requires a number of different circumstances. And I want to come back to that a little bit later, but I'm going to finish the synopsis.
Okay.
Again, like, long story short, the group of Wreckers are able to eventually overcome Tarantulas, who is able to mass displace himself and becomes a gigantic spider. They're able to help bring down the entire place by making Tidal Wave essentially overload himself. And again, jumping around a bit, we get closure on the... So it was Guzzle's friends that were killed by Cup way back in Spotlight Cup. We knew this in Last Stand of the Wreckers, but he was never actually confronted him about it or anything like that. Well, finally he does, and it ends up costing him his life as Impactor kills him before he can kill Cup and Prowl. That's too bad, but anyway. So, also Impactor kills Hubcap earlier. So Impactor, by the way, racking up the old body count in this series.
He's usually the one that pulls the trigger for Prowl, by the way.
Yeah. And that's
so he's kind of used to that.
Yeah, and that's the main discussion here, and he literally does it with Hubcap, although Prowl was kind of coming around to his thinking.
Yeah, but Prowl was just going to sit there and just kind of point a gun at him, and it was just like, no, I'm not even going to give you a chance to think one way or the other whether or not this is good. Boom, he kills him.
So what I wanted to come back to is, and again, going back to the Prowl never has to deal with consequences or anything, I'm curious what everybody thinks. So in the end, Tarantulas created Springer, and he discovers that he's alive, and that's really all he wanted. If Prowl hadn't hidden all of this from him and done his usual kind of Prowl thing, would any of this have happened? I mean, Tarantulas doesn't seem like the most stable being in this series, but in essence Prowl did kind of take his son essentially away from him
and just sort of
raise him as his own, because again it was another piece on a chessboard that Prowl could use later on.
Which is funny, because it's also the only person he trusts, so It's one of those things. It's just like, well, does even Springer know that? And he doesn't.
Yeah. By the end, we finally we realize that Springer really doesn't. And
yeah,
it's so overall. I mean, this series is really good. It lives up to the legacy created in Last Stand of the Wreckers, I'd say, without being heavily burdened by having to read it. So I mean, there's definitely references there, you know, stuff like Roadbuster's past, Guzzle's history with Cop, and of course we see Iron Fist's corpse briefly, or Physitron, whichever you prefer. But even without all of that, there's still it works really well on its own, and I completely, instead of splitting that up into A and B, just said it all as once, so ignore the fact I said A there.
I mean, what was out during this time? What else was that? Like, what storylines were going on in the ongoings?
Not RID. We had Sideswipe and RC trapped on the Ark in the middle of nowhere. Okay. That resolved well for Sideswipe, didn't it?
Stop!
And yeah, it got resolved a year and a half later. So anyway, there was that, and then in More Than Meets the Eye, everybody was stuck on the Necrobots planet, which resolved really well for Skids and Ravage.
Not really. If you read Last Stand, if you're a fan of the Wreckers, like Lady Wreck is, and like we all are, but she's diehard, obviously, folks. I mean, she's obsessed. She has an unhealthy obsession with a couple of the creative team members.
You think?
I have no idea what you're talking about, but in terms of Transformers creative team members, if James Roberts told me to like spend the night with him, I would. I mean,
okay. On that note,
there's only a handful of people that are on that list, like Trent Reznor and a few others. God. But you know, it's important that.
So anyway,
we are on the podcast. This is being re-recorded.
Yes, this is. So we are not re-recording any of this.
Obviously, you've never listened to me on any of Mike's podcasts because I've said,
well, I haven't. I'm sorry.
Yeah, see?
She's been too busy. She's got three kids and she's trying to go to four different conventions this year. And
well, you can.
I'm going to four different conventions.
Oh,
I
don't know.
Solve both of those problems at once. It's well known that a healthy child can get upwards of $10,000 on the open market, so.
Oh!
I'm just saying. Anyway, Mike,
all right, so what I was trying to say is
I would never do that.
Yeah, so what I was trying to say in the beginning before this went completely downhill was that to me, going back and reading this, I think you can read this without reading Last Stand. However, I think you should read Last Stand.
Yes, actually,
because it is very, very well done, and it is at some point Nick might go back to do another record story, who knows. I don't know. I asked about the ongoings at the time because I was wondering if any of that stuff had any hints of what was going on here, and it doesn't seem that's what I'm saying. It doesn't, so it doesn't really matter. You can read these five issues by themselves and not feel like you're missing anything that was going on in either of the ongoings at the time that this came out.
More than that, I'd just say that if I were to recommend two Transformer trades without asking that people get into the entire series or any others, these are probably the two I would. Even going back to a lot of the old Transformer stuff, like I have all the old UK trades and the Marvel trades, these two, as you know, in particular Last Stand, to be honest, mm-hmm. Stand up brilliantly on their own without even any prior Transformers knowledge. And I've loaned them out to people who have said, holy cow, this is one of the better, you know, graphic novels I've read, who don't know anything about Transformers. So, yeah, I highly recommend both of them.
Absolutely.
I completely agree. That's a glowing endorsement right there. I would definitely, and I've done the same thing too, where I've given out issues and have gotten people into Transformers just because I did that. So, amen.
Yeah, and I enjoy both of these. I give Last Stand a bit of an edge just because I love Tarantulas. I think he's great in this. Oh, but good God, I love Overlord. He has such a childlike joy in sadism that it's almost refreshing because there's nobody else like that in Transformers. He's just such a joyful jerk to everybody. And then when he reappears later on, his brilliant conversations with Tarn, I mean, I just love that character.
Yeah, I agree.
So what you're saying is Overlord is essentially your long-lost brother.
Maybe, but like my assholishness doesn't result in repeated death.
Well, there is that.
Overlord pushes people to kill their best friends. So I mean,
and make them enjoy doing it.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Yes, but that's Overlord.
Yeah.
Actually, to be honest, different variations. I mean, even after reading Sins, I'm like, can we just call the subtitle to this Daddy Issues?
Yeah, basically. I mean, both characters have their own. One of them is the father. The other one, desperately wants Megatron to pay attention to him.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even on a lot of characters, looking at a lot of characters, daddy issues, relationship issues, we got issues here.
Yeah, so I think it's interesting that this is one of those that proves that Nick Roach can stand up with Roberts and some of the Furman classic stuff as one of the best Transformers writers, period, in any medium. And I think it's interesting that over the last few years, a number of people have done that. Roberts, you know, came out of nowhere years ago to, in my opinion, be the best Transformers writer we've ever had. And since then, I mean, Barber, I love his work on the Dinobot trilogy. I think that's some of his best, period. That being, what is it, Punishment?
Punishment, Redemption, and Redemption Salvation.
And Salvation, that's it.
Gotcha.
I absolutely adore those trades as well. And now, yeah, Nick Roach, who initially I think his best stuff was just the Cup Step Spotlight. Then he, you know, comes out with Last Stand, and there was some question, you know, what did he write? What did Roberts write? Mm-hmm. And it turns out, hey, wait, they're both great writers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, yeah, you can't. The reason why it was so good is because they both know each other. They've been friends for years, even prior to their writing together. So there was, of course, the inside joke. It was, you know, Roachert's. You know, you can't tell the difference between one or the other, but quite literally, they both are, in their own right, very, very good writers, and their work stands for, plenty of it stands for itself, so.
Absolutely. All right, so what would we give Last Stand, Ryan? 0 to 5.
Last Stand? Well, Last Stand...
not Last... Yeah, Sins.
I don't think there's a big enough difference in terms of quality. I would actually give it a 5 as well. I think this is one of the best Transformer trades, period. And, yeah, I mean, he's good.
He's good. What about you, Amy? What would you rate Sins?
I would absolutely give it a 5. On a rating of from 1 to 5, right?
Yeah, 0 to 5, yeah. Yeah,
yeah, gotcha. Yeah, I would put it in the 5 range.
Yeah, it's probably going to be 5s all around. I really did enjoy it. I thought it was a fun Transformers ride that you didn't need to have to have read, you know, 2,000 other issues to get what was going on. I mean, you just have to go back and read Last Stand to get kind of the introduction. But even so, you know, this picks up at the very beginning to where...
Even
they
if
set
you don't
it up
know
nicely.
All the backstory, like you said, I mean, you don't have to have read Last Stand, but it's highly recommended. If you read Sins and like that, you're really going to like Last Stand as well.
Yeah.
So.
And absolutely. I think that's been another area that IDW has really excelled at. It's a lot better if you know the history, but in particular, each of the individual writers have crafted a series or franchise that you don't necessarily need to have read everything. Barber, Scott, and Roberts have both done, you know, fantastic job with their individual ones, and just, it's good writing. It's not dependent on, you don't need 300 years of X-Men history to build off of. They just tell good stories and have excellent characterization, really, in each issue. And we just got a jumping on point for the two main series. And, I mean, Till All Are One, which I would argue is the best of this sort of short-running series so far, has only 11 issues under it. So, I mean, they've created good jumping-on points, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I find it outstanding and incredible that IDW has written a number of really good stories that can really be read in pretty much any order, essentially beyond Last Stand.
Yes.
I think the earlier stuff doesn't work as well on its own. And to be blunt, even long form isn't as good a quality as the later stuff. But, yeah, this really the past 5-6 years of Transformers has been the best the fiction has ever had overall.
Absolutely.
It's definitely a good time to be a Transformers fan or reading comics. So if there's somebody out there that this great jumping on point, and then it just gets better from here on.
Yep, absolutely. All right, where can the people find you online, Amy?
You can find me online at Lady of Rec, Twitter. Twitter of Lady
Ryan.
Of
Rec. Ryan. At Nightbeat on Twitter.
There you go. At least you didn't forget this time. I am also at TFG and Mike on Twitter. You can follow The Pullbag on Twitter. It's at The Pullbag. Follow at Geekcast Radio for all the other network updates. Next week, Ryan and I are going to be going to Piggy Island to transform the Angry Birds. So that's what's coming up next week in Autobotly August, Angry Birds Transformers. So that's going to be fun.
It's surprisingly good.
Well, Barbara wrote it. I mean,
I've heard good things. I've never read it. I should probably do that.
I know.
You have wait.
I don't expect much from an Angry Birds Transformers crossover. I don't expect much from crossovers, period. So,
how have you never read this, Amy?
I just never got around to reading it. When it came out, I had a newborn, and it's just gotten put off. Oh yeah, I'll get to that someday. I know,
I
just your mind, right?
Yeah, I'm like...
I mean,
you know.
To be fair, if I'm including a list of the classics with which people need to get to reading, Angry Birds Transformers, despite the fact I just said it was good, probably not in the top 100 trades. I'm just going
to
call
it. Well, no, but, I mean, she used to read all kinds of stuff, and I know she's been busy the last few years, but, like, I mean, come on!
I just got caught up on Lost Light about a month ago, so don't give me too much grief.
Oh, yeah, I haven't got... I just finished...
And you haven't
not
even
read
it yet.
Yeah, no, I haven't even read it yet, so...
Do you even know what happens to Megatron?
I know what happens to Megatron at the end of More Than Meets the Eye, but...
Okay,
so
there you go.
So you haven't seen...
You're not up on it.
No.
You haven't seen him completely dismantled. Really?
Not yet.
I can't believe Swerve beat him up.
Stop it.
That was a shocker.
Yeah.
With his
big
gun.
Oh, Lord. All right, folks. We're going to get...
I love that thing. Anyway.
God.
Speaking of...
We are getting the heck out of here. Make your grit escape into comics. We'll catch you next week with Angry Birds Transformers with Ryan and I. And, yeah, transform and, I don't know, roll out or
roll
something.
Out.
Who knows? I don't know.
Shouldn't have been Wreck and Roll for this episode?
It probably should have. Wreck and Roll!
You've just heard the latest episode of The Pullbag, the GCRN's comic review and discussion podcast. There are several ways to get in touch with us and leave feedback for the show. You can visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on the episode and all of our different podcasts. You can rate our show on iTunes. Be sure to leave us feedback. Call the voicemail line, 502-526-5821. Please remember to tell us the show you are leaving the message for and your name. Become a fan of us on Facebook by searching Geekcast Radio Network. Send us an email feedback at geekcastradio.com. Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio. So until next time, make your great escape into comics and unleash the geek in you.